Mastermind Agent is proud to present the Interview of the Month Club. Top agents, rising agents, team members, and guests from across North America reveal their success secrets, strategies, and systems in up-close and personal interviews. You can find all the club interviews at www.mastermindagent.com.
Hi, I'm Mike Cerrone with Mastermind Agent. This month's top agent is Sam Miller with RE/MAX Stars in Mount Vernon, Ohio. Last year, he closed 203 transactions. In his best year, he sold 380 homes. And during his career, he's helped over 3,500 families move. He operates a team with 7 members, 1 closing manager, 1 listing manager, 1 marketing specialist, 1 online marketing assistant, 2 buyer agents, and 1 team leader. Sam Miller is the team leader of the Sam Miller team. He has been an agent for 26 years. He works the Knox County, Ohio market. Sam started real estate when he was 18 years old, directly out of high school. He mentored under his successful grandmother for the first year and had a quick start. Sam continued the concept of family practice when he added his wife and later his daughter to the business. He will describe the keys to working with your spouse and child. Sam has built a powerhouse team in a very small market of 15,000 people. Over 20% of the town is a past client. His monthly market share has been as high as 30, 40, and even 50% of his entire MLS. Sam is a proficient marketer. He talks about a wide variety of lead generation, including magazine ads, newspaper ads, direct mail, postcard, marketing reports, brochures, yard signs, movie events, sphere of influence, geographic farming, first-time buyers, video emails, branded websites, stealth sites, and more. Sam describes how he prepares for listing presentations. He shares scripts and dialogues that he uses to find the seller's true motivation before he goes to the house. Sam carries over 100 listings at a time. Sam also talks about the benefit of a partial release versus a short sale. Plus, we'll hear about his team, shadowing and mentoring, and profitability. Welcome to the call, Sam.
Thanks for having me.
Before we talk about what you're doing today, let's go back for a moment and talk about what you did before you got into real estate.
Sure. I was in high school.
How old were you when you started in real estate?
18 years old. I got in right out of high school.
Why did you decide to jump into real estate so soon?
I had a grandmother that was in the real estate business who really inspired me. I always thought I wanted to be an attorney, and I went on a lot of appointments with her when I was young. And so it just seemed natural. I mean, I saw the day-to-day operation of her business, and I just thought it would be a perfect fit.
When you started up, did you work with your grandma?
I did. I trained underneath her really aggressively for probably a good 6 months to a year.
Did you have a quick start or a slow start?
I had a fairly quick start, I mean, compared to most agents that come in the business, just because, you know, seeing what she did and learning the things that she knew and going on appointments, I was essentially shadowing another agent every day, you know, going on appointments with her. And so it just brought me up to speed a lot faster than what it would the average agent.
How long have you been in real estate now?
I got my license in 1986, so I'm 26 years in the business.
That is a career.
That's a career.
How many homes did you sell last year?
I had 203 transactions last year.
How many homes have you sold in your career?
3,500 homes, a little bit more than that probably. And my biggest year ever was 380 transactions in a single year. That would have been in 2003 at the peak of the market.
What has changed since 2003 to now that your volume has changed? Was it the change in the market?
It was definitely the change in the market. It was also... That was such a robust market where people would put their house in the market and it would sell instantly and they would buy another home. And now the dynamics have changed where a lot of the people that are selling their home, they're selling because of distress situations, financial issues, employment, where they're not in a position to buy the second home. So as far as the listing side, we're probably doing every bit as well. Where our challenge, of course, is after I sell the client's house, they may not be in a position to replace it. So previously, back between 2001 and 2006, every buyer we worked with was essentially, unless they were a first-time buyer, they were worth two transactions, a sale on their end to sell their existing home and replacing it with a new home, which obviously triggered more sales to take place because the house they bought, and those folks would want to buy a home. And so it was a massive domino effect. And when the people stopped buying replacement homes, it slowed that mid-range and upper end of our market. We're in a very small market, so we felt it, you know, much more than a very large metro market might.
Where is Mount Vernon, Ohio?
Geographically, I'm in just about the exact center of the state of Ohio. Small town, 15,000 people. It's the area I'm in is Knox County, Ohio. And so Knox or Mount Vernon, about 15,000. And the county is about 55,000 people. So we're relatively small.
Is Mount Vernon the largest city in that area then?
Yeah, it is. Mount Vernon is what they call the county seat. It's the largest populated city within the entire county of Knox County. And we're geographically located about an hour from Columbus, about 2 hours from Cleveland, and about 3 hours from Cincinnati. So anyone that's familiar with those areas, it kind of puts it into perspective.
What's the main type of industry in that town? Is it farming? Is it manufacturing? What's going on there?
Mainly agriculture. That's huge because, you know, small community but big acreage, so lots of farms. And then also some manufacturing. They have some oil and gas manufacturing companies here, which certainly helps.
So are you mainly selling single-family homes, or are you selling larger parcels, farm and ranch?
The core business that we do is single-family residential homes. Some might be with an acre, 5 acres, but it's definitely not 100-acre farms, that sort of thing. That's not the bulk of our business. It's single family, face-to-face buyer and seller.
Describe your current real estate market.
The average in our market, the average price is in the 130 range. It's been anywhere from 100,000 when the repos were really heavy and we were seeing a lot of lower stuff sell, upwards of 150. We're a little lower than that right now because we're still recovering, so to speak. Time in the market is over 6 months, so you got to get to know your clients fairly well, even if they're priced real well, because there's so much home sale contingency situation that takes place in a slower market.
Are you seeing the prices then trend back up, or have they flattened out? Are they still falling?
We're definitely on the flat side. There are certain segments of our market that have not hit the bottom. There are other price in air locations where we're definitely at the bottom, or at least it feels like we're at the bottom, and we see very little trending upward at this time.
If you were to look out at your market, the overall market, what percentage of the properties are retail or equity sales versus REO and short sales?
Say 75% are equity sales, and then the balance 25% are either foreclosure sales, short sales, or some sort of distress situation.
From the top of the market to the bottom, how far do you think that it fell? Did it fall off by 10% or 50%?
I would say it depends on the area. We have a lake resort in our area that the lower prices were hit really hard, and they were hit more than 30%. We have a waterfront section with homes on the lake, and those were barely hit. Those barely came down. Residentially in our community, though, like in Mount Vernon or the surrounding communities, we saw every bit of 25 to 30% of the equity just dry up overnight. Now, the challenge with that, of course, is that, you know, we could have sold the folks the house, say, in 2005. They have an employment change now where one of the spouses lost their jobs. And it just makes it really, really difficult because they owe far more on the house than it's worth, let alone before you subtract out any selling expenses.
Short sales still do not account for more than 25% of the sales. You still have 75% of the people who are at least above water or figuring out how to clear it out. And so that's why I was asking how far it fell down. Is that because they already had some equity in their homes, or people just bringing a lot of cash to the closing?
It's a combination of both. If they bought the house prior to, let's say, 2001, or they didn't use it as an ATM machine and pull all their equity out, a lot of them still had equity even with the reduction in value. And then the flip side is a lot of the other people are bringing cash to closing. A lot of them are negotiating loan balances with their lender and carrying some money forward if they don't have the cash because they don't want the short sale or the foreclosure. And you'd mentioned earlier about the 25% in short sale. That was a combination of short sale and foreclosure both combined, that 25%.
So the majority of the people, 75%, are just figuring out a way to make it work.
Yeah. And from our perspective, in a lot of the cases, it has been better for them to do that.
Do you have any kind of niche, or would you consider yourself more of a generalist?
I would definitely say because of the size of our community, you have to be more of a generalist. In our market, there's basically somewhere in the 600 to 800 transactions a year, depending on the year. And so with that few number for an entire board of realtors, you've got to be able to do all of it.
You actually have a huge market share. I mean, if I'm doing that math right, you have like anywhere from a 30 to a 50% market share of your entire market?
Well, there have definitely been months where we've had close to 50%. You know, that's the total number of sales. My number I gave you, 203, is number of units or transaction size. So you have to actually take that number and times it by two. So on average, I can have 20% market share pretty easy.
How many agents are in your board?
We've been anywhere from on the high side 140, 150. I think we're down now in the 80s, 90s. And the challenge with us is we're surrounded by boards. So like Columbus is huge. It's a metro area with 5,000 people. So we constantly have agents from that market coming in and trying to cherry pick stuff in our market as well.
Could you give us a list of the different ways that you're generating business?
Sure. Kind of fun. We're still doing print marketing. You know, so many people talk about print marketing not working anymore. One of the things that we found is our success rate with print has actually gone up at the time that most of our competitors pulled out. And I think for a couple reasons, one of which is it's something they can hold in their hand. They physically see it still makes that impact. And the second thing is so many of our competitors got out that all of our print, the news, the magazines, the direct mail postcards actually stand out probably 10 times more now because I'm not competing with most of the other agents when it comes to print. So that's a big one. I mean, that's a significant portion of our business that comes from marketing is still print. And then the other thing with print that's so sweet is so many people claim that, you know, online marketing, you know, they're doing 80% of their business from online marketing, but what they don't tell you is that they're still doing segments of print that are collateral marketing to drive business from the print to the web. And so that's key for us because everything we do in print drives it back to our online marketing. So, and then obviously online marketing is massive. Our sold sign marketing and our for sale sign marketing is huge. We're using a reflective real estate sign that practically glows in the dark. So that has been significant. That's probably been one of the better things. I would highly recommend that to any agent that's considering upgrading their real estate signs is definitely go with the reflective signs.
Would you consider print direct mail?
Sure, because it is a form of print. It is a tangible print item. So I definitely lump that in together.
Then let's break those out individually. Let's just pick one. How about the newspapers?
Probably 3% of my print budget comes from newspapers. Not a huge segment.
Did it used to be larger and you reduced it, or has it just always been a smaller source?
Definitely was a larger portion. Probably at one time it was more than 25% of our budget. But as internet came along, you know, that part really grew.
And so the 3%, what are you doing there in the newspaper still? What have you retained? What's still working?
Special announcements, something really unique, like a property that you've got that you want to give it that extra push. Sample monthly payments. If someone, you know, if that market is, I've got a bunch of houses in a certain price range where the sample monthly payment is as cheap, if not cheaper, than what the average rent is, that's a great way to drive traffic back is, you know, if someone can afford to pay what they are for rent, you can flip them over onto a house, and that's significant. So that's probably my best stuff going right now in the newspaper.
Those are display ads versus a classified ad?
It's more of a classified ad. It's just a text line item ad.
Okay, so it is classified.
Yeah, and the neat thing is you can go into the for rent and the homes for sale section, even if you're not with a place for rent, and that really has helped as well because you have people going looking at homes for rent, and you know, you have a house for under $800 a month or under $700 a month that they can buy, and our average rent in our area is like $815. So it's like, why wouldn't you buy if you could?
All these things that we're going to be talking about in print, you're driving people over to your online site. Is that correct?
That's correct.
How about magazines?
Lots of print in magazines. I run anywhere from a low side of 15 pages a month in a magazine to as high as I think we're running 22 this month. All the listings that we have, we run, you know, all of them in the magazine until they close.
What kind of magazines are these?
The traditional homes book type magazine, like a Homes and Land, a Harman Homes. It's the traditional homes magazine you would pick up at a grocery store or at a shopping center. It's not anything unique, just a basic ad.
What type of business are you generating from that? Are you generating buyers or sellers?
almost all buyer business that comes from that. Now, obviously, some sellers pick them up thinking about maybe doing something, but the bulk of the initial calls that we get come straight from the buyer.
Describe your ad. What does the one of these pages look like?
It's usually an 8.5 by 11 sized ad. About 1/4 of the top of the page is our top banner with our contact info, web address, and then basically we'll have 12 houses on each page. With street address, always, we always put the street address as the headline of the ad. We always list the number of bedrooms, baths. It's a basic verbiage ad, and we always, always put the price in the ad. Goes against what a lot of people are preaching, but it works for us.
Are these full color?
They have not been full color until just a couple months ago. Our magazine just converted to full color, so they are now. But previously, for the last 20 years, they've all been black and white magazines. And it didn't hurt us because there was no color magazine that they were competing with. I mean, we're such a small market, it didn't matter.
How are you doing a call to action? Are you asking these people to call you on the phone? Are you sending them to a website? Are you doing the old-fashioned IVR, the 800 number? Where are you pushing these people?
We're out of the IVR entirely. We're not using IVR any longer and haven't for a bit. We're driving them to the website. Every page has got the website in two different locations. For more information on these properties, visit, and it's got the web address, knoxcountyohio.com. And then, obviously, we have local phone number and toll-free number. We still get a tremendous amount of phone calls off the advertising, a lot of call-ins, hey, is the house still available? And the neat thing about these magazines is it takes from when you turn the ad in until the book hits the street, it's about 3 weeks old. So some of the things they'll call in on are under contract or sold. And so that engages you into a whole different conversation about what it is they're looking for. So just opens the door.
How do you track whether this is successful? When they go to the website, are they having to enter some kind of code or hit a certain landing page? How do you know that those leads were coming from the magazine?
We don't. If they go to the web and they don't physically call us, it's harder to monitor how they got to us. That requires us to correspond with them when they'll reach out to us and request more information on a house. By the way, how did you find this property? And that's how we'll find out if they find us from the web. From the phone call, they almost always are saying, hey, I'm calling from Holmes Magazine, or hey, I saw this house in the magazine on page 13. So we're logging in every time someone calls. We're tracking where that lead came from.
What percentage of your print budget are you think you're putting in the magazines?
Oh, I'd say the print budget is probably 15% of my total budget.
Of your overall budget, your overall marketing budget?
My marketing budget. No, not of my gross revenue, no. That would be too high.
You're putting out a lot of pages each month. How many calls is that generating? You're tracking your phone calls. How many phone calls is that bringing in?
It's a couple hundred on the low side.
What other print marketing are you doing?
Definitely direct mail, postcards. Mainly we're doing a lot more just solds than we are just listeds, but we'll do some just listeds. Those can vary from as few as 200 per listing to as high as, say, 550. And what determines the difference is obviously the price range of the property. So, but we're doing that. And then the brochures for the brochure box, we're doing full-color brochures. We get a tremendous amount of calls or people going to the site from the brochure boxes. A lot of people have went with the QR codes, but they're a little harder to track. And the brochures work. I mean, it's a pain in the tail to keep them full, but we literally get tons and tons of leads from the brochure boxes.
How do you know that? How are you tracking that?
Number one, we're filling the boxes literally weekly. So we know clients are driving by the home and picking up the info, which is, it goes back to the idea of all the advertising we do has the street address of the house as the headline. So people know where the home is before they even call us to see if they like the house. So we're not fielding, a bunch of low quality leads. We're trying, from that aspect, we're trying to get the A and B, the people that are really hot, ready to do something. Those are the calls that we're really shooting for the telephone. The internet leads is totally different. You're getting a combination of A, B, and C quality leads. But yeah, we're getting calls directly from those brochure boxes. Hey, I'm in front of the house. I pulled the flyer out of the box. My office hears that almost a daily basis.
So you're not using an IVR or one of these text-backed message writers. You're just using the traditional brochure.
I am using the traditional brochure, and I'm giving them enough information where they can determine if they are actually interested in the home. So a lot of people say just give them enough so that it forces them to call you. And that's fine. But the calls that I want the people to be dealing with from the direct phone call, I want them to be a little better quality. And by giving them that info, it definitely increased our quality of a call.
These postcards you said you're sending out just listed and just sold?
Yes.
What makes a just listed or just sold postcard successful?
Definitely street address, definitely good pictures, definitely the price. And then we target it to the area where the house is located in most cases, because most of the neighbors that live in that area are very curious. And that's an easy way to buy market, is you become the neighborhood expert really quick if you're consistent with that message.
On that postcard, are you naming the neighborhood or stating that you're the neighborhood expert?
No, I am not. But they get enough cards from us in that area very consistently so that they recognize, hey, this guy's doing a lot of business in this area. And we're such a small community that most areas don't have neighborhood names. It's either Mount Vernon East, Mount Vernon West, North, South. So, because we're an older community. Average house here is over 100 years old.
Inspections must be interesting.
They can be very interesting. But if you set the stage up front that the people aren't buying a brand new home, I mean, you're looking for safe, sound, sanitary, you know, that sort of thing, you know, it's not difficult.
Are you putting your picture on all these advertisements?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm definitely branded in everything that we do.
Do you brand yourself or your team?
It's still mainly branding me. And some of our marketing is team focused, but mainly, you know, because I do all 100% of the listing appointments. And so those are the calls that we're gearing on. So most of that marketing is done in me.
Are you doing any other type of direct mail? We've talked about just listed, just sold postcards. Any other type of mail that you're sending out?
Sure. Market reports, telling what's happening in the market. Those are less frequent. Those are more quarterly based. How many homes sold in that area, what the averages are, what the competition is, you know, what percentage of homes last year did not sell. That's always a hot topic that people talk to us about. They can't believe, because everyone assumes that every house that goes on the market at some point will sell. They don't realize that half the houses for sale will never sell in this market. So, but we share that type of information, and that's kind of the bulk of it. And of course, all your past clients, sphere of influence pieces that you mail, you know, we do monthly mailers to those.
Quite a bit of your business is coming from past clients and sphere of influence. How are you doing that? How are you generating a consistent relationship and that business coming in? What are you doing to make that happen?
Well, there's a lot of things that we do. One, you know, there's people that haven't sold a house to for 15 years, and they're still in our system, and they're still helping us, referring business, talking about us, and sending family. So, you know, we don't give up on anybody. You know, as long as they're loyal to us, we're definitely staying in touch with them. And so we're doing postcards that way. We're sending information. We track everybody when they buy a house from us, what interest rate they bought at. So when I see an article about the interest rate dropping, anyone that's got a higher rate, you know, we have those databases separate. We'll shoot a note to them just following up. And it doesn't benefit us to get them to refinance, but it does benefit them. So we're trying to help them. So it's stuff like that that we're constantly sending out.
Do you have a formal plan to go out to the past clients? Are you trying to contact them a certain number of times during the year?
Yeah, the answer is yes. And we try to hit them 22 times a year. And then I do movie theater events where we invite all of our clients to a movie theater. And I basically rent a movie or the theater and have a special movie event. And we're doing different things like that in the community. And like I hooked up with a local furniture store and negotiated a 15% reduction on furniture purchases, and the company and I, we created cards that we send out to my clients. And if you hadn't bought in 10 years, you still get one of those discounted cards. And so I'm doing little things just to stay in front of the client and to help them and to add value.
How big is this database of past clients and sphere of influence?
Well, we've sold about 3,500 properties. Our database for that group is actually a little bit more than that. Some of our clients obviously have gone through divorces, so we've had to split up. And so some of the sales that we've made end up becoming, you know, two people instead of just one. But it's a little over 3,500 just for the past clients in the sphere of influence.
Are you just adding to that database by past clients, or do you also have some kind of system that you're trying to build your sphere of influence?
Mainly it's past clients or vendors that we work with. we're constantly wanting to build, but when we build the database out, they don't go into that group. We'll create new segments or new database fields for a different group. And an example would be if we had an event like at the Apple Valley Lake and we met, 30 people, then I'm going to create for that specific event a database field so that I can send them, send everybody a letter that's special to that event. If I put them in the normal database field, they're going to get dumped in with everybody else and they're going to get something that's not as personal. And really the personal side of it, like if you attended an event and then you find out all the things that happened at the event, maybe you weren't aware of, or you get copies of pictures, it's easy for me to do it that way, where if I lump you in with everybody else, it's very tough. My goal is to get you in as a past client, and obviously then you'd be in two groups at that point.
What kind of information do you try to collect on each individual? I assume you want their name and their address, phone number. What else? You want their email address? What are you trying to gather up?
Property type is important. Do they live in a ranch? Do they live in a two-story? Where do they live? What school district are they in? Do they have kids? Do they not have kids? Are they retired? Are they employed? All things that make a difference on the types of things that we can use to drip with them, because we've got a lot of really nice drip programs that we've built over the years to stay in contact with them. I'm getting USA Today online every single day. I see tons of articles that I think apply to my clients. If you're a dog lover, I've got a group of a couple hundred people that are dog lovers, and you guys will all get an email that'll highlight an article that USA Today did with a link. So I'm trying to make that personal connection with everybody.
So you're customizing your communication as much as you can.
Yeah, I am. And I think that is where, where I'm getting basically about 40% of my business is, past clients and referrals. That's how you're able to amp that way up. And with the number of past clients that I've got, which is pretty significant and it's growing, I mean, there's a point I could probably stop everything that I do and just be a word-of-mouth business with no marketing whatsoever and probably be a very successful business. It's not my goal. As the market rebounds, we'd like to ramp back up and do 400 or 500 units a year at that time, but we need that backside of the transaction to take place. We need to, instead of just selling them one house, we need to be able to sell their house and have them purchase another for us to get back into those numbers.
I was just realizing 3,500 past clients, that's like 20% of the town.
It's pretty close.
Let's talk about this past client contact. You said 22 times a year. Break that out for us. What are you doing to contact? That's like twice a month. How are you contacting them?
Well, a lot of it's email driven. A lot of it's like the couple times a year is the time change, notifications, letting you know to set your clocks, holidays, your anniversary, your own personal anniversary, like for your marriage, your birthday, your spouse's birthday, kids' birthdays, all with cards. The home anniversary of the purchase, the market, couple market reports at least four times a year, and then any articles. And email is a totally different animal as far as making those connections. So, if you're in five of my database groups, one, you're a dog lover, two, you love auto racing, you're constantly getting this type of information as well. So it doesn't take long until you hit 22, 25, 30 connections a year. Plus, in a town the size of ours, with the number of listings we carry, you're being influenced by our real estate signs every single day. You can't drive down a single street without seeing a couple of our signs.
These 22 contacts, most of them are email. Are some of them also mail outs or hard copy?
Of that group of the 22, probably 16, 17 of those are actual postcards.
Most of them are postcards then?
Yep. Yeah, like the anniversary is a card, birthdays are card. So, and that usually equals five of those contacts. Time changes twice a year. That's two more. So they add up quick.
You mentioned movie event. How often are you doing the movie events?
Well, we like to do the movie event at least once a year. It's just a good face-to-face event, and we've done something unique with that, and that is that I get to be the guy behind the ticket counter. So when they come in, we have a confirmation number. They'll walk in. They'll give me the confirmation number, And with the number of houses we've sold, you can't remember every single person that's bought and sold or one of my team members might have sold them a house. So the confirmation number, when I cross-reference it, it's got their name on it. So then it's easy for me to say, hey, hi, Bill and Jan, how you guys doing? And it just that another personal connection. So that has worked spectacular. And that's an expensive event, but it's one of the best things that I can do for good PR and good connection. And always after that movie event, we'll sell five or six houses. because of that within a month or so that probably would have never happened otherwise. So it pays for itself instantly.
Who do you invite to the movie night? Are you inviting everyone in your database?
All my past clients. So anyone that's bought, sold from us, anyone that's referring us business, the vendors that we do business with, and of course the active listing inventory that we have at that time. So any house that's for sale at that moment, it will invite those clients as well.
How many people show up?
Well, our most successful event, we actually had to book two theaters. So we had to book two different movies and have them run the same movie simultaneously. So that was 650 people. We're very strategic in how we do it. We do it when the movie theater is not open. So we actually open it up a couple hours on a Saturday morning before the theater normally would open. And that way I literally control the entire movie theater. So from meeting them for the movie, a brief introduction before the movie starts, I can get in front of the crowd and thank them for coming and appreciate their business and just make it short. It's not a commercial or anything. It's just a big thank you. And it's almost always a movie for their kids. So it's not anything where I have to worry about anything controversial, which is worth a lot. You know, I mean, we've done like the movie Cars and we've done Shrek. And I mean, I've just done a bunch of them.
Are they usually current run movies or are they sometimes older movies?
No, they're never older movies. They're brand new runs. The movies here usually release late Thursday night, Friday for the new release. I always do the event on Saturday. So the movie's been out literally one day. So that's one of the ways that makes it really cool is that, hey, they're going to get to see a first run movie and they're going to see it for free. It's been huge. It's been really a big event.
And you said you go in front of the crowd right before you start the movie. How long is that and what are you saying to them?
It's 1 minute to a minute and a half, and it's basically, hey, guys, I really appreciate, you know, all the support you've given us. This has been a great year. We couldn't have done it without you. Hope you enjoy the movie. And it's not much more than that. I mean, it might be, hey, you know, the market's doing this, but it's literally 1 minute, just long, and we don't run any of the normal preview stuff that runs before a movie. They literally kick the movie on, and we go straight to the movie.
Are you providing food or drink?
None. The concession stand is open. We basically are providing the seats, the tickets. And the thing we learned after we did the first event, obviously, anytime you do something the first time, it's a little bumpy. It was very successful, but you can easily overfill a theater very easily with the number of past clients that we have. So everyone, they all got postcards in the mail and emails, both, that they had to call our office to receive a confirmation number. And we basically were keeping track of by the number of people that called us, we knew how many people were going to attend. And so, you know, like if you were bringing a family of three, you know, it would be Sharoni 3 was your confirmation number. And then what we did is we were able to continually keep a running tally. And then when you came in, you said confirmation Sharoni 3, and then boom, I got it cross-referenced, mark your name off, hand you the tickets, and you're in the door. That worked so well for us because we would have had a lot of disappointed people if we didn't know how many people were showing up and we had 200 extra people that we had to turn away. That would have been a disaster. So instead, we immediately called the theater and said, guys, we got a problem. We're way overbooked on this. Can you get us a second run? And they said, well, yeah, we'll definitely do it. And the neat thing is, since it was not a movie that was run during a normal time, I was able to negotiate a much better price per seat. So it saved us some money as well, because that's how they charge us per ticket.
I like how you're doing the confirmation number. It's their name and the number of people that they're going to attend, so you immediately know who it is when they walk up.
That's exactly right. Because how many times in our business have you ran into somebody and you go, I know them, but you know their name, you probably think their street address, you can't think of their name at times, and it's happened to all of us, and it was just one of those things that solved that problem.
That's genius. Plus, because of having the confirmation, you already know who's going to show up and you might study your list real quick.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's great. Yeah, because that's a fear of mine and I'm sure many others. So that's excellent. Do you have banners up in the lobby?
I don't. I bring my moving truck and the moving truck is no longer a moving truck for clients to use, but it was at the time, but we still bring it. It's parked out front. And I'm actually dressed fairly casual at the event instead of in business attire. I'm basically like them. I actually sit in the movie, watch the movie with them, with my family, and it's just a good connection. but really no banners, but I don't need them because there's no one else there except my clients. And what's neat is it brings all these hundreds of people together that all bought and sold homes through us. So they're Samming it up. You know, Sam was great. He did this and that. And they're all together. That's the one thing every single person in that room has in common is that they did business with us. And so the buzz is usually really high. And the thank you notes we get, it's fun to see the little drawings that the kids do with crayons, you know, because it's always a kids type movie where the parents send it and say, hey, really appreciate it. Little Johnny, you know, he wanted you to have this. And so, again, it's an emotional connection that you make with your clients. And it's valuable. I mean, that's one thing, you just can't run an ad that'll do that.
Vendors. Do you have vendors show up or participate in this?
I have vendors that I do business with that I appreciate that I invite to the event. I do not reach out to them for any financial assistance whatsoever. I take this on myself. They benefit from my business, but they help me in a lot of other ways. So I don't mean financially. I just mean, we do enough business in our community that they appreciate us, and when there's a pinch, they take care of us. And that's really what we're looking for. I'm not looking to get in their back pockets, and they don't get in ours.
What is the cost of putting on an event like this?
I mean, that could be depending on how many people we get. It can be $3,000, it can be $4,000, depending on how many people actually are going to show up. We did one on, it was about 3 years ago, 4 years ago. We did it 3 days before Christmas, and it was a Saturday, and we were way overbooked because everybody was in town and they wanted to bring all their family members who were visiting them for the holiday from out of town. That one was bigger, but you learn, and that was kind of a cool thing to be exposed to all those folks, even though we hadn't sold them homes, because all the people are saying, "Hey, my realtor's putting on this event," so that was significant. We were probably unprepared for that many people, but we made it work.
Is the theater charging you per person or per room?
Per person, so you're paying for every person, and they're not charging me per room because we're not doing the event during normal business hours. We're doing it before they open. So we're doing a morning matinee, so to speak. And so they don't have to, because otherwise people would be wanting to buy tickets for the movie while I'm there dominating the room. I wouldn't fly. That's why we wanted to do our own.
So it's coming down to maybe $5 a person. Does that sound about right?
No, it's more than that. I want to say now I think matinee in our area, the normal tickets are $9. And I think we were paying $6.50 or something. It can be an expense, but again, it's great money. I mean, it's great money spent for a long-term benefit.
Did you have to guarantee the theater a minimum amount or minimum number of people?
Yeah, but I think it was only like $1,500 minimum. We've never been close to that. It's always been more. And they sell all the food, and they sell all the candy and popcorn and everything, and that works out for them just great. That's why they're willing to do it for us. Because most of these movie theaters don't make that much money on the movie. A lot of that cash goes back to the company, the production company. They make the money on the food.
You mentioned earlier, and I want to go back to it, your signage, your yard sign. You said that's working well for you. Let's break that down a little bit. You said, first of all, it's a reflective sign. What color it is, and what do you mean by reflective?
Well, I'm with Remax, so it's red, white, and blue. Reflective, just think of a stop sign, a yield sign, any traffic sign in your community that's posted, and your headlight hits at night and the sign basically glows. That's basically what my real estate sign does. During the day, you'd never know it was reflective at all, but at night, driving down the road, your headlights hit it. You know, you can see it 100 yards away, you know it's my real estate sign. And I'm the only one with Remax that's got reflective signs. So my signs literally are advertising 24 hours a day.
I assume it costs extra to have this reflective material?
It does. It's almost double, but it's a one-time purchase, so it's very, very inexpensive. And in a community the size of ours, I've got over 100 listings plus arrow signs. You can imagine how many times you'll see those day and night. I mean, it looks like it's the only real estate sign for sale. I mean, it looks like I'm the only guy.
How many directional arrows are you putting out per listing?
It depends on where the house is located. If it's on a main road, probably no directionals. If it's tucked back a street, it might have two additional signs pointing to that one, sometimes three. There's a main road that I can put an arrow directional and then a side street too. So, I mean, I have right now about 350 real estate signs that are up in our entire county. So, I mean, I'm not joking when I say there's not many streets you can drive down and wouldn't be exposed to our signage. And it's huge. And when you get a sold sign up in a market, I mean, the buzz is massive. And we obviously follow that up with sold signs. So if they didn't see the sign, they see the postcard. And in the market that we're in, and I think this is significant for the listeners, you know, there's so many people that either think every house sells, and then the people that don't think that think they can't believe any house is selling. So when you're sending out just sold cards with a street address and it's in their neighborhood, it gives them a positive feeling that there's activity, and we're the ones usually providing that information, so we're the ones that usually call.
The directional arrows, are they also using this reflective material?
Yes, they are.
Do you have a brochure box then latched to the sign?
We do. And they're a clear view brochure box. We learned our lesson. Since we have winners here, you always want to be driving by the signs and make sure that the brochures are full. You don't ever want them to be empty. We used to use the color fronts where you couldn't see inside of them. So in the snow, you had to get out, walk through the snow, lift the lid to see if there was. So we figured that was a mess. So we ended up buying some really neat clear view that clamp right onto our sign, and you can drive by and see if there's brochures in them or not. And we'll usually put 35 to 40 full color flyers in them, print another 30 to 40 that we put in an envelope and give to the seller and have them keep them in their kitchen drawer. That way, as a system, if it starts to go low, they don't call us in a panic and say, hey, we're out of brochures, because of course they want you to refill it in 5 minutes. So instead, they'll reach in their drawer, pull the brochures out, refill it, then call us and say, can you send us a refill of brochures? We just used our backup. You have no idea how much time that simple system saves us over the course of a year. It's massive.
How many brochures did you say? Did you say how many you give the seller at a time?
30 to 40, you know, 35, 40. So we're basically printing 70, 75 flyers all at one time in the very beginning. Those can last anywhere from 2 weeks to a month, sometimes longer if it's on a less traveled road. But we go through a lot of them.
And then when you're ready to do refills, do you just mail them out to the homeowners, or do you actually have to send someone out there?
No, that's the beauty of the way we're doing it now, is you just mail them. Before, when they would call on a Saturday in a major panic because they're out of flyers and they got people driving by going up to the sign and they're all upset, oh, we're out of flyers, I can't believe you let it go empty, which 10 years ago, that's what happened. And we just come up with this system, and yeah, we just mail them because they've got the backups in the kitchen. So just so simple, so simple.
Simple systems.
Yeah, and you know, that's when you think about real estate, that's really what it boils down to. It's a lot of systems, but they're all, for the most, I'd say 99% of them are very easy, but you have to do it consistently.
Do you have your picture on the sign? Or are you using riders above or below?
Both. Obviously, color picture of me on the sign, my name, direct line, telephone number that rings directly into my office, and bypasses the main REMAX. It is a REMAX number, so because legally in the state of Ohio, I'm not allowed to direct them unless, you know, it's a company number. It is a company number. It just happens to ring into my team instead of the front desk. And the reason we did that, obviously, is we don't want to have an opportunity to lose any of the calls coming in. We don't want someone else grabbing our leads and not telling us they called for us. So we get all of our own leads, and that makes the conversion so much better. So, but I have upper and lower sign riders. One is the web address. The other is the traditional for sale rider or sold rider. But the other has our web address.
You mentioned when the sold rider goes up, you're getting a lot of activity. Have you done anything on that sold rider to make it stand out?
We did one that just said sold fast by Sam Miller. And we don't use that on a lot of them. I mean, if it's sold in a week or 2 weeks or something really quick, then we'll use that. I do a sign rider that says reserved. Before you get through the home inspection process, once it goes under contract, if I think the deal feels good, we'll put a reserve sign up because no one knows what reserved means. And that generates even more phone calls. Hey, I saw the house down the street, said reserved on it. What does that mean? Now we've got an opportunity to interact with the folks that we wouldn't have had otherwise. And then sale pending, obviously we don't get calls for sale pending, but that creates a buzz because, hey, I see you got a house down the street, sale pending. And again, when you're in a small community, you run into a lot of people all the time, and everyone wants to be talking real estate with you. So it's just a great interaction for us.
I want to make sure I got that order correct. When it goes under contract initially, did you say you put the sold sign or the reserved sign?
We put reserved. Reserved goes up first, meaning that, you know, Mike has reserved this house, meaning you're in contract, but you probably have a financing contingency. You probably have a home inspection contingency that we haven't worked through. Now, the benefit is we'll obviously tell the buyer who calls, hey, the house is under contract. with the buyer, but it's subject to a home inspection, subject to financing, so we don't know if it's 100% solid. Let's take your name and number. We'll follow up with you. By the way, you know, we've got three other houses in that price range. Would you be interested in having us send you some information or show you in those homes? It just creates one of those opportunities that you wouldn't have had otherwise. But if I put sale pending on it that very same day, I won't get that call.
When do you put the actual word sold on it?
There's two steps before that, but when I put sold is the day it closes. So our market, it's not sold till it closes, and there's been agents in the state of Ohio that have had their license suspended for saying a home is sold when it isn't because they stopped the activity on the home for their seller. And we actually had someone in our board of realtors that was reprimanded for that, so we have to be very, very careful. So that's the reserve makes perfect sense. Sale pending makes sense, but it stops phone calls. So once the home inspection and the financing are solid, that's when the sale pending sign goes up, and then sold goes on the day that it closes.
And how long do you get to keep that sold sign up then?
It depends, Mike. If we had the buyer and the seller both, I might have that sign up for 2 weeks. Now, if it was a co-op sale and I had it listed and someone else brought the buyer, then that varies. Some people want your sign down. They want to have their sign up, or they may have their sign next year's, and that's fine. So, but, you know, it could be 3 days, 5 days. You know, normally, if it's our listing and we do a lot of in-house deals, it could be 2 weeks.
You're asking your buyer, when you're working both ends, you ask the buyer if you can leave the sign up a little longer because that's giving you great exposure.
Absolutely. And I have never had a buyer who bought a home from us that we had listed that said no. I mean, in 26 years, they've never said no.
When you are just working with a buyer, let's say a first-time home buyer, and they purchase a home, are you putting your sign in the yard after the sale?
I wouldn't put the word sold. We have a special rider that says bought through or bought from. And it's got our name and it's our real estate company. So the answer is yes, I would put a sign up at some point. You know, in part of in a small community, you want to get along with all the other agents. You want their cooperation. So I don't rain on the other agent's parade. Some people would think, oh, Sam's going to make us take the sign down. I'm not going to make them take their sign down. I might tag mine after they pull theirs down. We might put our sign up at that point. But, you know, you got to get along with everybody in your market or you're not going to have any co-op sales. And with the inventory we've got, I want everybody showing our stuff.
Let me switch to a different topic. You mentioned geographic farming. Are you farming a certain area?
Yeah, the whole county. Our database is 20,000, a little over 20,000 people. And most people can't, I mean, and I say that almost jokingly. It's not a joke. It's serious. But most people in a larger market could never do that. But they could break down zip codes in their area they want to work or massive subdivisions that they want to be known as the area specialist. Our community is just small enough that I can get away with doing the entire county.
Are you doing something specific to those entire 20,000? Are you mailing out 20,000 pieces of mail each month, for example? Or how are you targeting that farm?
Four times a year, everybody's getting a state of the market housing report from us. Everybody. Anyone that's got a mailbox, I don't even care if they live in an apartment, they're going to get a piece from us in the mail. It's going to basically say how many sold, how many didn't sell, what price ranges were hot, and it's just some basic information. It's on a postcard, and everybody gets that. So that's four pieces of marketing they're going to get through direct mail. So, and of course, you probably know direct mail has gotten much, much, much cheaper because now the post office has the deal where you can mail everybody on a postal route, and I think it's close to 12 cents or 11 cents or something now. I don't even have to put labels on them or anything if I send a mass saturation out. Significant savings because it would have been, I think, 45 or 50 cents for, because I'm doing half, you know, the postcards are like half page type postcards. So cut the cost way, way down.
It's a half a sheet of paper. It's a jumbo size card.
Yeah, jumbo size card. I think it's 8.5 by 5.25, I think, is the exact dimension. And we just have a company print them for us. And you'd be shocked what a good deal you can get if you tell them they would like to print 20,000 of these. They're used to hearing people say 200. So the year 20,000, the price goes way, way down.
Sure. And with that discounted mail cost, that used to be your biggest cost. Combined, that's not too shabby. You can actually hit a lot more homes now.
You can. And I can put literally almost five times as many cards out for the same price. And it's not, that's probably four times. But still, it's significantly more which is why we went to the half-page card. The postal rate was exactly the same doing this new deal through the post office. And I know the internet is eating the post office's lunch right now, and that's why they're running these specials, but it's good for us.
Anything else that you're doing farm-specific? You've got these four postcards going out a year, these quarterly cards. Anything else you're doing to stay in front of your farm?
Yeah, so the four goes to the entire county. Then I break each area, like all the people that own properties at the Apple Valley Lake, they're on an entirely separate farm. I literally built a website specific to the Apple Valley Lake so that people would recognize me as the area expert. It's not even my normal real estate website. It's a totally separate, fully branded site, applevalleyohio.com, that is for that community that I sell real estate in. So, yeah, all the flyers, all the updates, the new listings, the solds, all that stuff is going every time we list or sell a property, say, at the Apple Valley Lake. So these people are hearing from us very frequently.
How many of these unique separate websites for a subdivision or an area do you have?
I really only have the one specific to Apple Valley because it was a big enough market that it would support it. You know, you wouldn't want to build a bunch of micro sites that took a lot of maintenance to keep up. One, the search engine optimization would be really tough to stay on top of. This one is easy to stay on top of, and we're on page one with Google. I mean, that's with all the different communities and the clubs and organizations in that area. I mean, we're ahead of all of them.
You said it's large enough to warrant this. So how big is this area, this Apple Valley Lake? How many homes are in there?
About 2,600 homes, and there's about 6,600 lots. Now, the lots, the balance of those obviously are undeveloped, but people own them. So we do some lot business as well. And as I said earlier, single-family homes is the bulk of our business, but we do some vacant land. You know, we'll do multifamily.
Are you sending out your postcards to the lots?
No. The normal postcards are not going to the lots because the rate of return would be too low. But they are getting the quarterly, the four-card quarterly. Theirs is specific, those lot owners are specific, only to Apple Valley lot sales. They don't get any of the house sales or any of that stuff because it's pretty much irrelevant to them. They have a lot that someday they're going to sell or build on. So theirs is very, very infrequently, only four times a year. And then we're driving them back to the website as well because we're blogging about sales activity on the site as well.
So this one subdivision or area, Apple Valley Lake, it's about an eighth of your entire town. It's about 15% of the whole town. Is that correct?
No, because it's not in Mount Vernon. Mount Vernon's about 15,000. That's part of the Knox County. That's part of the 55,000 number. So, and like I said, there's 2,500 homes, 2,600 homes there.
That's one of the ways you expanded beyond your town then.
Yeah, and I pretty much had to. My goal at one point, and for 10 years, my goal was to close a deal a day. I needed to do 365 transactions, and I had that goal for 10 years. And I got to like 309 and 322, and I kept getting close. But I couldn't get to 365. I mean, it was killing me. So I just had to grow where I wanted to do business so that I had a bigger opportunity to do it. So, and that's exactly what we did. It was just a mental shift because you're only going to get so much market share no matter how big a community is. Because everybody's got a cousin, everyone's got a brother, they know someone in real estate. So you're only going to have so many available options, I guess.
These websites, are you building them yourself or are you using a company to help you with that?
Yeah, I'm definitely not building them. RealPro Systems has built several really, really good sites for us, and they maintain our primary site and our Apple Valley site.
I've talked with Rob Levy and the RealPro System. We've heard a little bit about it. Are you using their branded or their stealth sites?
I'm using both. KnoxCountyOhio.com is a custom branded site that they built for me. It's geared, you know, strictly on my real estate business in Knox County. Then they built the gold site. That's the brand model of the site they built for AppleValleyOhio.com. And then I have stealth sites, like I have KnoxCountyBankOwned.com, which is a stealth site that's geared strictly on bank-owned buyers that are looking for bank-owned homes. This is the golden home run. If you're going to hit a home run, a grand slam, this is probably one of the best ways to attract buyers. And that's to advertise, you know, bank-owned listings. You don't have to have any bank-owned listings to do it either. That's the other beautiful thing. And then people will literally will fill out a form on a website requesting information on bank-owned homes. And then, of course, you get their name, phone number, email address, and then you can follow up with them regarding bank-owned homes. The thing that most people don't get in the real estate business, I always hear people say, well, I don't want to sell bank-owned homes. I don't want to be in that business. They don't have to be. Most people who register to buy a bank-owned home never buy a bank-owned home. The whole reason that they registered is they are looking for a home that they think is a really good deal. They really don't care if it's bank-owned. They just are looking for a very specific home in a specific price range. So in the MLS, you have the ability to provide that along with bank-owned homes as well. It's huge. I mean, it's probably the one best thing in the last 3 years that we did to create more convertible buyers.
It's a stealth site. They don't know it's necessarily coming from you. They just think it's bank-owned homes in your area. They're filling out a form. You're getting their contact information. What's the key to converting them into a buyer?
Following up with them. It's sending them the information on the available bank-owned foreclosure, bank-owned homes. And then after they get that, we use a video email system where we can actually record a video email and send it to them. It's kind of a welcome type thing. So, you know, they don't know they're dealing with, you know, Sam Miller team when they fill the form out. They certainly know it within 5 minutes of receiving the first email. But we're giving them everything they want. The connection rate is huge because, again, nobody else in our market is doing it, number one. And so I kind of look at it as if, how can you make a buyer raise their hand and tell you they're a buyer? And this site is exactly that. It causes them to raise their hand, reach out to you, connect with you, telling you what it is they're looking for. So it's just a natural way to gain extra business you wouldn't have had otherwise. I would say one out of five of those people that contact us never buy anything at all. And it's a smaller group versus our email home search, but the connection rate, you can get four out of five of them to be active on a regular basis and interested in buying. That's huge. Because, I mean, in internet leads, you're lucky if you can close 3-4% of an actual inquiry. And these rates are way higher.
How high do you think it is?
Well, I think if you work it, you could close literally four out of five of the people who are serious. They would buy a home. You just have to give them exactly what it is they're looking for. And again, lead incubation, this isn't something you'll sell the first day. This may be something you're working with for 6 months or a year before they're in a position to do it or you find them the right house. But it's a much more motivated buyer in most cases. So many of these people aren't buying these houses to live in. They're buying these houses as an investment. And that's why they're looking for bank-owned. Some are contractors that are interested in buying. You know, we're in a community where it gets really cold in the winter, so these contractors want houses to work on in the winter because they can't do outdoor repair. So they buy a house as a project to keep them going through the winter, where they're going to get them through until spring where they can do outside work on homes and make money. You don't get the same number of leads, but the leads you get are much higher quality. They're more closable.
You mentioned that you follow up right away with a video email. What does that mean?
Well, we have the ability, instead of just sending a normal email, I can follow up. I can literally sit in front of my computer. I use a MacBook Pro. And I can, within 1 minute, I can record a quick video, and then I can send you an email that has that video embedded in it. So instead of just saying, hi, you know, it's Sam Miller, you'll literally see me saying, hey, thanks for filling the form out. We're happy to help you. You know, in addition to bank-owned homes, you know, we can also help you with other homes of exceptional value, divorces, estates. You know, are those the types of properties you're also interested in, or do you just want to know about bank-owned homes? And so it's something totally different. It works on their iPhone, so if they get the video email on their iPhone, they click it, it plays, it opens up their YouTube browser. It's totally confidential. No one else can see the video. It's not listed where it'll show up in the search engines and stuff. So, but it's just a neat thing to improve your connection rate.
Do you remember the name of the company that you're doing that through?
Yeah, Real Pro Systems.
Oh, it is with Real Pro itself. Okay.
Almost everything I'm doing is pretty much through Real Pro, except my original website I built 15 years ago. Everything else I'm doing is directly through them.
It must be working.
It's working amazing. The year that I did 380 transactions, I think we probably had half the leads that we were getting at that time was coming straight from their sites. So it was huge. So it's a great product.
This is the end of part one. The interview continues on part two.